Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin our program by taking a look at the UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic. And I think it's an appropriate time to be doing that because the clinic was featured in a movie, essentially, a series that's going to premiere tonight on HBO. It's called The Weight of the Nation. It's a four-part series, airs tonight and tomorrow night. And if you can't get HBO or don't have HBO, you're going to be able to watch the entire series on the HBO website. But Randy's unit is UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic was featured in this HBO presentation. So we wanted to have him on to talk a little about that and also, of course, to talk about fitness with our youngsters. Certainly, and I should also mention that later on we're going to be having a couple of people on who will be talking with us who were heavily involved in the producing the HBO series. So we'll do that at about 11:45. But for now, we're going to focus and zero in a bit on fitness and our younger folks with Randy Clark, clinical exercise physiologist, manager of the UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic. With us by phone, Randy, are you there?
Thank you for that great introduction.
Well, I tell you what, I'm really happy to have you with us today. And let's talk first about what goes on at the UW Pediatric Fitness Clinic.
Well, thank you. You know, we're really one of a kind. UW Hospital has put their full might behind this and agrees that we have a social responsibility to address this problem. It's a very unique clinic that uses four components. We have a physician who does a physical exam to make sure that there aren't any underlying medical conditions that might be causing the problem. We also do a really neat body composition scan. It's called dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. As a clinical exercise physiologist, I get to do all those scans, and that's neat because it measures the weight of the child's bone, muscle, and fat. It's
wow.
Very visual. They get a neat picture to take home. They get a huge kick out of it. And then we use that scan to track their progress. They also meet with another exercise physiologist to do a treadmill test to look at their fitness level and monitor change. And then they meet with a nutritionist to talk about diet and exercise and the role that calories play in this whole procedure.
Wow. We'll be talking a bit later on with John Hoffman and Dr. Judith Salerno from the HBO series, The Weight of the Nation. And, of course, as I mentioned, your clinic was featured in the program. What did they focus on?
Well, it was a fantastic experience working with HBO. The documentary is very hard-hitting. It really lays out the issue that we have with our young generation, and it's really a call to action. They visited a number of places across the country. Apparently, they liked what they saw at our pediatric fitness clinic. They spent 3 days with us.
Wow.
They followed two of our families closely. They spent time with them at school, time at home, as well as time in the clinic. So these families sort of opened the door and allowed the general public to take a look at their challenge and how they're struggling with that. And by doing that, it also allowed them to sort of feature a clinic, our clinic, that's trying to make a difference, that's really trying to help these kids.
That's outstanding. What are the ages of the kids that you see and serve?
Typically, we see between 5 and 18-year-olds. Now, we've seen kids as young as 3, believe it or not, but typically 5 to 18. Our average age is about 11.
And what kind of medical issues are they dealing with or at risk for?
Well, that's the biggest challenge of all. You know, this generation the research claims are this generation is the first generation in history with a shorter life expectancy than their parents. And the reason for that is because we're now seeing diabetes, cardiovascular disease, heart disease decades earlier than we ever did before. And that's a direct result of childhood obesity.
Oh, man. So this is very, very, very critical for all of us or any of us with children.
Well, you know, I have 2 kids of my own.
Yeah, and I have an 8-year-old.
I have a 7 and a 9-year-old. And, you know, this is something I think about all the time. Fortunately, my guys are pretty active, but you would be amazed at the number of kids that are not. We see three times as many overweight children now than we did in 1980.
Wow. Yeah, I feel kind of fortunate. Our daughter is, you know, she plays basketball and on a couple of teams, and she plays soccer, and she's taking golf lessons, so she's in really great shape.
Well, and you're fortunate, and I would guess that part of that comes from you, because the parents are a huge factor in this. I mean, it's a family issue. The parents are the role models. The kind of the lifestyle that you lead and that you demonstrate as a role model are the ones that they tend to pick up on. However, you know, our society has changed a lot in the last 25 years, and there is much less activity going on in general now than there were 25 years ago. And that's part of the puzzle. That's not all of it, but that's a big part of it.
Randy Clark, our guest today, clinical exercise physiologist and the manager of the UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic, our guest. Were you an overweight child? Did you carry that over into adulthood? You worry about the weight of your children or those close to you. Wonder what you can do to help. Maybe you're wondering that. Give us a call with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can post a question or a comment right there. What is it that's changed so much in our society? Is it just the online business that's keeping kids or making kids overweight and obese?
Well, you know, this is a really complicated puzzle. There are a number of factors. A couple of them I'll just point out. One of them is screen time. If you think about it, now, I was the outside generation. You know, we played capture the flag, kick the kind. We pretended to be a Green Bay Packer, and we were outside constantly. They couldn't drag me inside. I can remember sitting at the dinner table. I couldn't wait to get back out. It's very different now. The average child spends 6.5 hours in front of some sort of screen. Now, that could be a computer monitor. That could be a television set, a Game Boy, a cell phone. And so that the amount of time spent in sedentary behavior has increased dramatically. Our society's changed a lot. I mean, you think about development, you think about sprawl, and you think about the way neighborhoods are designed now compared to how they were, say, in the 40s or 50s. We're basically a society dependent on the automobile. It's much harder in many places to get around. It's harder to take a walk. It's harder to ride your bike. Now, where we live here in Madison, Wisconsin, we're very blessed. It's a relatively pedestrian and bike-friendly community, but many places aren't. Plus, there's safety concerns. There's more and more parents that aren't even comfortable with their kids outside playing.
Yeah.
In my work in the clinic, one of the most shocking conversations I had with any parent was a parent that told me, "I don't want my child outside. It's not safe out there." Yeah. And I just about fell off my chair. But it made me realize how different it is now than when I was a child. You know, you look at playgrounds, and many of the playgrounds are empty. You know, if there's not an organized practice or soccer or baseball or something like that, kids are just not out there in free play.
I noticed that, and actually, we'll sometimes on the weekend walk to one of the parks, and Emily can be the only person there.
Yep, and that's very different than when I was a kid, or maybe when you were a kid.
Oh, definitely. We lived outside.
and that doesn't even touch the nutrition end of it, which is a huge component. Look at the advertising that kids face, and look at the proliferation of fast foods and high calorie. It's both the activity and it's the diet, and neither one of those can be overemphasized because they both play a role.
Let's take some calls. Lots of people online to visit with you, Randy. Boris in Wausau, turn to you first. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi. This is a great show. My question is, we have a fairly fit 11-year-old and a fairly unfit 9-year-old. We ourselves, we ski in winter, we bike in summer, we go kayaking. But then when it comes to more endurance stuff, we have tried without success, and we're both medical professionals, to find resources as to how fit does my son have to, or should he be if he's otherwise completely healthy? How long can he run? And there's, you know, online is like a vast amount of resources, but there's between the countries huge differences. The American Society of Pediatrics doesn't really have any guidelines on their website. I wonder whether you have something on your website or whether you could point me to somewhere where I can find out about that.
Well, great question. There are, as a health professional, you realize there are many different takes on this. Understand that we are working with some kids that are at a very low level, and that sounds like yours is not at a low level. But one of the guidelines that we try to live by, and this is just sort of a practical summary, and it goes like this. All children should be physically active daily or nearly every day, and that should be part of their play, games, sports, work, transportation, recreation, physical education, or planned exercise. It doesn't have to be planned exercise. It can just be fun. And that really should happen in the context of, you know, the family setting or school or any community activities. One of the things that we have to be really careful of is the word exercise, because a lot of kids, that's a turnoff, because exercise doesn't sound like fun. Exercise sounds like frequency, intensity, duration, and all these complicated things. We try to focus on the fun. We try to find something that they like doing, somebody that they like to be with, because that will work. That will keep them in it. I think we got to be careful that we find the right currency for these kids. What works for one child doesn't always work for the same child within the same family.
All right, yeah, I get good points from that.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
And Gary in Wausau, turning to you now. Hi.
Hello. Several years ago on the World News, they had a story about Phy-Ed classes being cut due to budget cuts. They had a statistic like 50% of school districts had eliminated Phy-Ed. How does that affect health, students' health, and I'll listen off the air.
All right. Thank you for calling. What do you think, Randy?
Well, this sounds like a planted question, but it's not. I am a former PE teacher and high school coach, believe it or not, and so this is very near and dear to my heart. And that's one reason my work in the clinic has really brought things full circle. And let me start out by saying this. As soon as we can make a very strong relationship between academic achievement and physical activity, then you'll see Phy-Ed playing a higher profile role in the lives of these kids. There's starting to be some research coming out now, but we need to reinforce that academic achievement, which seems to be the priority for school districts, for funding, for parents. If academic achievement can be more closely tied to their physical activity, then Phy-Ed comes back. Just some numbers. Currently, 50% of kids are not enrolled in a physical education class. And just looking at the changes, PE, physical education participation, has dropped at the high school level. So about 80% of the kids do have PE still in ninth grade, but that drops to 35% by the time they're a senior.
Wow.
Yeah, in their daily PE class, you might remember when there was a daily PE class, there were still 42% of schools that had daily PE in 1991. That went from 42 to 29% in 2001, and it's still dropping.
Wow. Not a very encouraging statistic there.
No, it isn't.
I want to give Shirley and Madison a chance to voice in here. Shirley, hi.
Hi. I just thought it might be worthwhile to mention that while parents do play a critical role, the parents' earning power severely impacts what their child can participate in and can do. And we no longer have, as has already been mentioned, you know, the option at the park meeting up with a bunch of pals because you can take your kids there and there's nobody else there. So the affordability of the sport, even something simple, I consider track kind of simple, soccer, hockey, baseball, all of those things cost big bucks, hundreds of dollars. In an already tight economy where parents are fighting to put food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good point. Thank you for that. A number of the patients that we see in our clinic do come from various economic backgrounds. We have a number of low-income families. We frequently use interpreters in our clinic. So we are very sensitive to this. And, you know, by no means are we trying to suggest that we want all children to become part of competitive athletic teams, because I know for a fact that that is not for everybody. What we're trying to do is bring back the play. We're trying to bring back active play. But you mentioned the role of a parent. I think it's a couple things that a parent can do that we can all do, regardless of how active our kids are. And one of the most important is limiting screen time. And some screen time is necessary, and some screen time is important, but we can limit that. Really try to encourage, you know, physically active play, to get outside and play, even if it's something as simple as walking the dog. If we can promote physical transportation, that helps. If we can encourage the kid for short distances, if it's a safe situation, can they walk? Can they take their bike? For those families that have computers, more and more recommendations now are take the computer out of the bedroom where they can spend hours and hours unsupervised, and put it in the family room where they can, the parents or the guardian can have a little closer watch over it. And it's not solely the role of the parent. This is a team effort, and you know, we can talk about the role of the physician if you'd like, the role of our environment, the role of the school, but you know, this, it really takes a team. It takes a community to raise a child. The parents are the front line, but they need help.
Randy Clark, our guest today, clinical exercise physiologist and the manager of the UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here visiting today with Randy Clark, clinical exercise physiologist, manager of the UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic. So we're talking about fitness with our youngsters. The clinic itself is featured in an HBO series, four-part series. It airs tonight and tomorrow night, and just a little later on the show, we'll be talking with a couple of people who were very instrumental in getting the that program on the air on HBO, and also obviously involving the UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic, which was pretty cool. They've done some really wonderful things at the clinic, and I'm glad to have a chance to talk with Randy about them, and certainly to take your questions and comments as we move along today. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. And someone wondered, what do you think of the Wii games? Are they a good tool for transitioning sedentary kids to get them moving?
Great question. And you know what? We use a lot of what we call exertainment. Now, exertainment sort of combines the word exercise and entertainment. And we use the Wii Sports game. We use the Xbox Kinect. We have these special game bikes where the kids are riding bikes, and they're basically watching themselves in a computer game riding next to somebody else, and they're having a competition on the screen. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool, and they love it because, again, you heard me say before that I was the outside generation. Well, this is the video generation, and it's taken me a while to kind of get my arms around that. But if we can marry this sort of video experience with activity, great. And for the first time, some of these kids tell us it's the first time they've ever enjoyed moving. It's the first time they've ever had fun being active. And so, yeah, that's been a wonderful step in the right direction.
The email from Phil, who wonders if there are any studies on the benefits of yoga and meditation on kids' obesity, and are the benefits lifelong? You know, programs for yoga and meditation. Are there programs available through schools and organizations?
Well, that, you know, I have to be honest with you, that's a question that I don't have any sort of research information to support. We don't currently do that in our clinic, but I am sure there's something out there. I'm just not the one to answer that. Sorry.
Corey in Madison has a question for you. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Larry, Randy. Listening at the beginning, I heard the description of the scans and the consults and physicians and the exercise physiologist. And in this era of healthcare reform, when a good program like this comes along, who pays for something like this?
That's a good question. It really depends on the insurance carrier, but we're starting to find many of the insurance companies are starting to realize this is important, and in many cases, insurance does pay for it. And I think, you know, as our society takes a look at this and realizes the long-term health expense down the road of things like heart disease, type 2 diabetes, are we better off making an investment now, or are we better off waiting until these problems get even worse? Now, this is a challenge across the board, but fortunately, more and more insurance is starting to cover this.
Yeah, it seems to me that, you know, an ounce of prevention would have been the way to go, you know, 20 years ago before our culture kind of evolved the way it did. But certainly, you know, as a taxpayer, I would prefer to pay something now than have everybody else have to pay for it later because we're being squeaky today.
Yeah.
So. And, you know, you're right, and that's one of the things that HBO did a terrific job of. If, when you watch this, you are going to be amazed at some of the things that are taking place in high places, in Washington, D.C., at government levels that are not helping. And I agree with you. I mean, I think we're better off making that investment now than waiting, but I don't, I'm not an insurance company.
There you go. Thanks, Corey.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Ryan in Duluth, it's your turn. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Hey, we decided as a family that we're making up flyers. We're just going to run around the neighborhood and hand them out and try to set up some kick the can and just kind of prime the pump. And maybe I won't have to, you know, schedule it in the future, but just to kind of get kids going and get them used to going out into the field and playing.
Great idea.
That's a wonderful idea.
I love that. I'm a former camp counselor. We used to love playing kick the can. And you know how few kids even know what kick the can means?
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. Capture the Flag, yeah. Kick the Can are almost games from a bygone era, which we'd love to see those come back. You know, another thing along the same lines is you're probably familiar with some of these safe routes to school where the number of kids that don't walk or ride their bikes to school, where parents are getting together and they're providing walking school buses, where a parent will make sure that a number of kids travel together and safely get to and from school. All those kinds of things. And that's what I mean about, you know, the community standing behind this and trying to help out in any way that they can. There's a number of different things that a community can do to promote activity in kids.
Yeah.
I've kind of chosen kick the can and kickball because I'm hoping that some of the parents will kind of relive those memories in their own mind and then come out, you know, push the kids out and come themselves just because I'm hoping that those games will give them that old school feeling.
Ah.
I think that is a great idea, and I can tell you from my experience here in our clinic that the best predictor of success in these families is whether or not the parents are on board.
Uh-huh.
And if the parents are on board, and what that means is the parents oftentimes participate.
Yeah.
And participation might be something as simple as taking a bike ride with them or taking a walk with them or playing a game with them or going to the park with them or coming up with some sort of active entertainment. If the parents are on board, that kid has a much higher chance of success.
Thank you very much for calling, Ryan. Great ideas. Appreciate it. We have more callers. I was just thinking about our own neighborhood. We actually moved to a neighborhood where we had children because the other neighborhood did not have children. So our daughter was spending a lot of time inside. Now she spends a lot of time outside. And we had a birthday party for me on Saturday, and I don't know how many kids from the neighborhood happened to be over that evening, running around playing games, and it was just a lot of fun to see them doing that.
Well, that kind of brings back the old days. You know, you think about old developments in old neighborhoods.
Yeah,
they had the porches on the front, and there was activity everywhere, and the parents could sort of supervise the whole neighborhood.
Yeah,
if you think about the way our developments are now, what do you see from the street? Probably a 2 or 3 car garage. And again, that's, I go back to that being designed around the automobile and not conducive to neighborhood play. You know, maybe there's a deck, but it's on the backyard in a fenced-in yard. And so getting the kids together, getting them out in public spaces and where the parents feel safe, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, our neighborhood has those big front porches, so it's an old-time neighborhood, and it's great fun living there, that's for sure.
And there's a move to bring those back.
Yeah. Jill in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Jill.
Hi, good morning. So I have a couple of questions for you, Mr. Walker. And so I'm just finishing my Doctor of Nursing Practice degree, and so I'm wondering, as I was listening to you describe, so you have a physician and a nutritionist, right, and then you have your other roles, but I'm wondering, what about the role of nursing and advanced practice nursing within this program? And then the second piece to that is, how do you see possibly advanced practice nurses participating in replication of this program, which would probably be a lower cost at some level, and you'd be able to replicate it in smaller communities and possibly have a larger effect overall within different states, specifically the state of Wisconsin?
Great question, and let me start out by saying I am all for replication because we need help. And I'll give you an example. The HBO special will suggest that about 10% of families and kids who need help approach the healthcare system for help. In Dane County and the immediate ring markets, there's 15,200 potential overweight kids, kids that are at risk, and that means 85th percentile of BMI or above. We see less than 2% of that in our clinic. So we need help. The kids need help. And in terms of nurses, I hope she's listening, but our nurse is the glue that holds our entire group together. She is the oil that keeps the machine running. She is the one that really develops the rapport and the relationship with the families to check on them, see how they're doing, to give them a call, to follow up on different things, or if they didn't make an appointment, are you okay? Is everything okay? Without the nurse, we don't really function at the efficiency we could now. And just to give you an idea of the immense scope of this problem, we started with one physician, one exercise physiologist, and one nutritionist, and we had one half-day clinic a week. Now we have four physicians, four exercise physiologists, four nutritionists, and we run clinic 5 half-days a week, and we still can't meet the demand.
Wow.
Well, and so then I just want to ask one follow-up question, because you were talking about the connection between the academic achievement and the physical activity. So what data are you looking at as far as metrics to provide that to the insurance companies? I mean, are you looking at BMI and then lipid levels? What data can you use to prove that? And don't you feel that maybe an advanced practice nurse could assist with that process to begin looking at that data, presenting the data, and being evidence-based as far as what you're doing in this process?
Sure. Well, one of the problems that we see is, you know, the BMI is the most commonly used metric.
Correct.
Now, we're fortunate that we have the DEXA scanner, the dual energy X-ray absorptiometry body scan, where we can actually look at changes in their bone, changes in their muscle, changes in their fat, if we can look at changes in percent body fat. And one of the things that we have repeatedly seen, and we've published this and presented this at American College of Sports Medicine, is that BMI does not track with body composition. Repeatedly in our school-based studies that we do, we can see an improvement in their body composition, an increase in their muscle mass, a decrease in their percent body fat, but BMI doesn't pick that up. So I know that not everybody has the luxury that we do to be able to scan kids, but my concern is that these kids might be making improvements, and we don't see it based on BMI.
Is there another metric that you'd want to look at?
Well, a body composition is one of the best tools that we have, as well as we also measure cardiovascular fitness. We do treadmill testing to look at before and after the intervention, after we come up with some goals. I mean, those are the two best. And again, we're mm-hmm. fortunate that we have an exercise science lab that we can run this clinic out of. And by the way, I need to tell you that that's one of the reasons that this has been a big success. The kids frequently tell us they don't feel like they're going to the doctor's office.
Sure.
They like coming here. This is the same lab that University of Wisconsin athletes have been tested in for 20 years, and the kids feel special. You know, they see the pictures on the wall, and they think, wow, this place is cool. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very different feeling than going to the doctor's office because I'm overweight. So we apply all the technology that we've used for high-level athletes to overweight kids.
Mm.
Awesome. You're doing a great job. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. Thank you for calling. Michael in Danbury, we turn to you next. Hi, Michael.
Hello, and thank you for listening, and it's an excellent program.
Thank you.
One of the things that we did as parents, we had five children, and what we did is, as they reached about the sixth grade, the oldest one, we took the television out of the house. And now, of course, you take we would shut the computer down and no texting until it was bedtime. And what we found is that the kids, all five of them, in their own age groups, drifted out into the neighborhood, found their neighborhood kids. They began to build tree houses. They even built a dirt track. They completed a park and put in a baseball field. And all this through the kids' energy. And it's amazing what they will be able to do on their own if they have to live on their own in that kind of an environment. It was just excellent.
That is one impressive parent, I'll tell you that. That took some guts. And I commend you. I'll tell you what we see, and I love the idea, but more and more of the families that we see that might be a single parent or low income, and they use the screen, whether it be a television screen or a computer screen, as the virtual babysitter. And the kid will be plopped in front of that screen and may spend a phenomenal number of hours in front of that screen in just sort of mindless activity because it's easier for the parent to do it that way. What you did took intestinal fortitude.
Yes.
it took a lot of guts, and I'm sure it didn't come easy, and I'm sure you had, well, probably some negotiations and some complaining along the way, but it worked, and you got them out there, but it had to be a challenge for you. Not every parent is willing to do that. There are a lot of parents, and I'm not trying to knock a parent because I know how hard it is. I'm a parent myself, but there are sometimes it's just easier for them to let the kid go watch TV.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Will emailed us and said when he was in school, they kicked the kids out of school for twice a day for 15 minutes recess and then half-hour lunch break. They kind of blocked the doors, and you weren't allowed to go back inside again until it was over.
I think that's great. That's exactly what they need. Burn off some steam, get rid of some of that nervous energy that they have, run around, play tag, play catch, play soccer, whatever, build a giant snowman. I love it when we have good packing snow and I go by the school and there are gigantic snowballs all over the playground. So you know that the kids have been out there rolling these snowballs. But if it was a weekend, that wouldn't have happened. That would have been empty. So that's why the schools are a huge player in this. Not just the physical education component, but the school lunch, the recess time, and promoting activity, and continuing to pursue that connection between academic achievement and physical activity.
I wonder, you know, you guys have done, from the sound of it, a great job of making kids feel, or children feel, really good about coming to your place. And you have certainly facilities that the parents often would not have at home. And I'm wondering, what advice do you have for getting kids moving in a fun but non-judgmental way?
Again, I think you have to be very careful to their currency? What will work with them? It's very difficult for parents to discuss this issue with kids. You don't want to hurt their feelings. You have to be very careful in the words that you choose. And that's why, you know, one of our first recommendations is not to make a big deal out of it, but just to try to be more active as a family. We do not put the kids on a diet. We don't use that term. We modify the caloric balance. In other words, we look at the calories in versus the calories out. And we try to make very subtle, minor changes in that, sustainable changes. If you put that child on a diet, that's not going to work. If it works for a few days or 2 weeks, invariably it will fail. So there are small changes that they can do as a family. And again, there doesn't need to be a lot of discussion. It's just something we're doing as a family. We'll feel better. We'll have more fun. We'll be together more often. We'll see more of each other. We're going to eat together at the table. We're going to go grocery shopping together. We're going to take a closer look at this because we as a family have decided that we'll be healthier, happier, feel better if we're more active.
Yeah. What resources or training and support are you able to offer the parents that you see?
Well, that's a very big part of it. The parents come to the appointments, and we talk about it as a group. We come up with very specific, attainable goals that the parents are involved in. We just don't tell the child what we want them to do. We have the parents included and say, what resources do you have? What does the child like to do? What are some things we might be able to think of as a group to get this young man or young woman more active? So we include the parents every step of the way. The parents are key to success.
And in our last minute, summer break here, what are a couple of concrete things that we can all do to help our kids get outside and stay outside?
Well, you ready for the final shocker? Our research, we've done a number of different studies on school-based exercise, looking at different curriculum and PE classes.
Yeah.
And we look at them in the fall, we look at different curriculum, and then we look at them again in the spring. And we look at how different classes have worked, what the kids like. And one of the byproducts of these studies that we never anticipated was that fitness goes down in the summer in kids.
Ah.
Now, how different is that than the summers we remember as kids? Again, that was the time when it was just go, go, go until you fell over. So the fact that fitness level drops in children over the summer months was really an eye-opener for me.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, I think it's going to be the HBO series is going to be an eye-opener, and I want to thank you, for Randy, for talking with us about what's going on at UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic, and obviously going to be able to see a little bit more of that coming up.
Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate the opportunity.
Randy Clark, clinical exercise physiologist and the manager of the UW Health Pediatric Fitness Clinic. And as I've been saying, the clinic was featured in part in a four-part series that'll be airing on HBO tonight and tomorrow night. And you won't need HBO to be able to watch it. We'll learn more about that from two people who have been heavily involved, John Hoffman and Dr. Judith Salerno. Our guests coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.